And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Christopher Vasey on natural remedies for inflammation. And of course, there's a number of other books here, lineups that Christopher has that I want to ask him a little bit more about, like the water prescription, but also the acid alkaline diet and optimal detox and things like this. A lot of good information here. But before we continue and do that, Christopher, let me ask you a little bit about your view on stress as another factor to creating problems in the body as well, because obviously we know about the chemical issue, the wrong food, the diet that we do eat, and how this is creating problems. What about the stress factor and things that are, I guess, mentally triggered as well? Is that a big concern to you?
Yeah, it's also very important. It has an important role for triggering illnesses, because when we are stressed, well, a little stress is good because it stimulates the body to function more quickly, more intensely. But when someone is constantly under stress, his body is under high pressure the whole time, is always fighting against, overworking very intensely, and it gets tired, produces a lot of toxins. And as we've seen, toxins are the basic nature of all illnesses. So our body have already a lot of toxins because most people overeat. But if they are stressed, then there's an overproduction of toxins. And the other aspect is that stress will hinder the digestions to take place correctly and the elimination processes to take correctly. Someone who's always stressed cannot digest well what he is eating, and therefore the production of toxins will be much higher than necessary. And if someone is always stressed and sad or upset and so forth, he kind of blocks his excretory organs, and the toxins elimination will not be so good. So that again will increase the amount of toxins in the terrain, in the body, which is the basic nature of illnesses. So it is an important point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people then have to either change their job or become more, learn how to de-stress. There are relaxation techniques which can be learned, which are easy to do and which are quite effective. And also they have to learn to stop when they come out of work, for example, if that's where they are stressed. They should learn to turn the button and then to go and run or do something very physical and rest and so forth. It's also kind of a philosophical aspect to it. People must reflect on their life. Is it really worth it? Is it exaggerated the way they react and so forth? Wouldn't it be better not to take things with another attitude, or maybe change the activities or surrounding?
Yep, that's right. Exactly. There's a lot of tricks to that, of course. Let's go through some of the other ones here before we kind of switch topic a little bit. I want to hear, of course, more if there's anything else you feel that we should talk about when it comes to natural remedies. But lemon eucalyptus, that's another one as well.
Yes, it's an essential oil which comes from one kind of eucalyptus. There are, I think, 300 different kinds, but this one is lemon eucalyptus. And it has a nice smell of lemon. And it's used, again, mainly for joints problems, sciatica, tendinitis, strains, and so forth. So you put 10 drops of the essential oil in a bit of sunflower oil to make it not so aggressive to the skin, and then you put it, rub it on the region which is painful or inflamed, and it's also very effective against pain, arthritis, and so forth. I think I'm always talking about joint problems. That's one of the basic illness, which in inflammation, well, the category. But
right.
Some plants also are very effective on bronchitis. That could be one of the plants. It can also be basil.
So an important distinction here, obviously, just to interrupt quickly, but is to note that some of them, you obviously are talking about you know, an essential oil, which is more for external use. And in other cases, we're talking about something you ingest and take it internally, correct? And you, obviously, you break down this in the book as well.
Yes. Well, essential oil can be taken, swallowed, but it has been, the dosage is very precise. It's 1, 2, 3 drops, 3 times a day, it depends. And not all the essential oils, but everything I've put in the book, all the plants, I've given the dosage and how to take them to be very safe and without not have any problems.
Yeah, definitely. Well, a couple of more I wanted to ask you about. Roman chamomile. I guess the same thing there. There's a lot of different chamomiles, and this is also a specific one. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a specific one. It's the one, the usual one, which is used. The flowers have are yellow in the middle with white around petals, white petals. And it's usually used as tea when someone has not digested well, against gastritis, for example. But it can also be used for enteritis, colitis, and so forth. Any inflammation in the digestive tube that is also in the mouth when someone has toothache or gingivitis, and so forth. That can also be a great help. The tea is more or less powerful, but the essential oil is, of course, even more powerful because it's more concentrated. One plant which we should mention is eyebright. It's a plant which is works very well on the eyes, as its name says. When someone has conjunctivitis or sty or hay fever and so forth, the eyes are swollen, red, runny, and so forth. This is very useful. A tea must be made with it, and then the tea must be used to make a compress or a wash of the eyes. You put the liquid on the eye and again and again, and it will calm the inflammation.
Interesting. That's I wonder if that's a name that has been kept from previous times when we knew this more inherently before the medicine field as we know it today came along. Perhaps that's why it's called eyebright. I don't know.
yeah, because it has been used for a long time against eye problems.
Yeah,
and many of its names in German and French are turned around with the word eyes to help the eyes and so forth.
Right. I see. Interesting.
Nicknames like glass breakers or myopia herb and so forth, or consolation for the eyes.
Yeah.
These are nicknames of the plants which were used for centuries because they knew that it was good for the eyes.
Exactly. That's right. English oak, that's another one.
Yeah, oak. That's is used to lower the level of histamine in the body. And it's also, but this is used in glycerin maceration, and it's the buds of the English oak. Usually it's the other part, the leaves or the, how do you call that? Oh, I forgot the name. The leaves which are used, but this is the buds. Buds have something special. It's something which is growing. There are substances in it which are very, have turned out to be very effective to cure people, and which cannot be found necessarily in the leaf, which results from the bulb.
Yeah, you're talking about the acorn, the nut of the oak. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. For example, the healing substance cannot be found in it. It's in the buds.
Yeah, I see. I see. Interesting. Now, before we move along here and see if there's anything else you want to mention about the book, what about calendula? I've heard that is a good anti-inflammatory as well. What's your view on that?
Yeah, it is. For the skin problems, it's really good. Eczema and itching and so forth. I haven't mentioned it. I haven't mentioned many, many plants.
Yeah.
Because there are too many.
I know, exactly.
Yeah.
These are I think well placed, and they kind of target a few different aspect of what are common ailments as well in the body, which is a good choice, of course. What else would you like to say about the material in the book or something else you want to, you know, let our audience know about before we kind of leave this topic of this book, Christopher?
Yeah, I would like to talk about cold water hydrotherapy, because cold water has an anti-inflammatory action. Just think, when you take a hot bath or you're in something, it's very warm around you, there are different changes in the body which take place, and these changes are the same as those which take place in inflammation. If you are in hot water, your temperature will raise because of the heat. The body will swell, and it become red, and can become a bit painful. Well, a bit, not too much. But three of the symptoms of inflammation are the redness, swelling, and temperature. And if you put do hydrotherapy with cold water, you put cold water on the body, on a part of the body, the cold will put the heat of the body down. The person will not have such a high temperature. It will also diminish the swelling of the body, of the part of the body which has swelled. And it will also, therefore, also get rid of the redness of the parts of the body or the part which is red. By that, I mean that using cold water has an anti-inflammatory effect.
Right.
And it's very cheap. It's available everywhere. I mean, if someone is camping somewhere very far away and has an inflammation, well, he might not find turmeric very easily in his forest,
right,
but he can find cold water probably,
yeah,
most probably. And there are different ways of using cold water. It's making a cold water compress. So you take a cloth, you put it in cold water, you kind of turn the cloth so that it loses a bit of its water, and then you apply the cloth on the region which is inflamed, like the knees, for example, if it's you've got joint problems and pain in the knees. And you leave the cloth on it until it becomes warm. And it will become warm after 5-10 minutes, depends. And when it's warm, well, it's not acting anymore. So you put it back into cold water, and then put it back on the knee, and so forth.
Right.
This is very effective. It will be effective for a certain time. Maybe it will calm down the pain for 1-2 hours, and then you've got to start again. But it's a good help. When someone, another way of doing it, which is a bit more violent, is to use ice. If you take different cubes of ice and put it in a cloth or a bag, a plastic bag or so, you've got a bag of ice, which you can lay on a region of the body which is ill or in pain, like a headache, if you can, or toothache, or joint pain, and so forth, or an insect sting, and so forth. So that's also very effective. Well, the ice cube will not melt in 5 or 10 minutes, so it stays very cold on the region, and that's why it shouldn't be less more than 1 or 3 minutes, and then it should be taken away and maybe reapplied later on. It's more stronger, more violent.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can see professional sports athletes do this all the time if they you know, get hit, or you know, I see it in, used to see it in hockey all the time. Obviously, they put ice on the knee or the leg,
yeah, exactly,
or something,
that's,
because it helps to.
That's it. Well, down. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. How about cold? Yeah. Cold water showers overall, then, if we think about the effects of that, I mean, could that be something good after you've taken a hot, steamy shower to, you know, do as much as a minute or two of a cold shower?
Yeah, that would be good. That's done is in a similar way after a sauna. You're in the hot air, and then you dive in a cold water basin.
That's right.
Or the pool. It's the same idea. But when someone is ill, it's not possible sometimes to be stimulate the whole body with a shower or with sauna. If someone has a pain in a joint, it's better to work only on the part of the body which is ill by laying the bag of ice, for example.
Yeah,
or the cold water compress. Yeah. Or also another thing I talk about in my book, the cold clay poultice. Clay is clay, and you can buy it in powder form. You mix it with a little of water, cold water, to get a paste which is quite thick. No, not thick, which is not too runny, not too humid.
Yeah.
And then you apply it on the region you want to treat, on an acne spot, for example, or a joint, or a boil, or anything.
Right, right.
And this will act in two different ways because of the cold we've just talked about, which will calm the inflammation. But clay has also the property to attract the toxins in the body and take them with it. So the body gets rid of toxins by applying cold clay poultice.
I see. Interesting. Yeah, because I've heard that for about certain types of, well, you can call it clay or even mud or something like that, that people do, you know, they put it on their body as a, you know, a mud wrap or whatever they call it, and that helps to pull out the toxins out of your body, right?
Yeah. Very effective. Animals also use it.
That's right, yeah.
The elephants, for example, use it. And in France and Switzerland, it is used a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much now, but in the past it was used, and it's very effective. But this is this activity of pulling the toxins out is one thing. If it can be a warm poultice, but it can also be cold. That's what we're talking about. And that's if it's cold, then the cold will have an anti-inflammatory effect.
Right, right, exactly. Well, it goes back to the sauna that you mentioned before. You know, being from Sweden, I know up there where the Finns are, of course, they crack open during the winter time, they crack open a hole in a lake or something like that. And after they've steamed in the sauna for a while, they jump in that. And that's like, of course, that's an extreme, you know, situation. It might be difficult for some people to do that. But it's interesting that that has a good effect on the body. Maybe it even helps to stabilize, you know, as you said, kind of your own thermometer, in a sense, that you when you get these extremes and your body has to work a little bit, you know.
Yeah. And in such countries as Sweden, in Iceland and so forth, they have long winters, cold winters. They don't sweat so much. So they, in order to keep a lot of toxins out of the body, they sweat voluntarily by taking saunas. Yeah,
exactly.
One thing I would like to add about cold water therapy is that when it's good to use on some parts of the body. I give the part in my book, but not on other parts. Like, it's good for skin problems, muscles, joint, tendons, nerves. But it's not so good or even bad if someone has cystitis. It's not good at all. Cold is not good at all. Or kidney problems, no good. The lungs problems are not helped by colds. I just wanted to say it because it can be counterproductive to use colds on such organs.
Right.
But it's all written in the book,
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, we have to refer to that. Yeah. But yeah, good that you mentioned that. Now, while we're on the topic of water here, then why don't we kind of switch over and talk a little bit more about hydration and that issue, because a lot of people are not drinking enough water. We know that, and we also know that what they are drinking is, of course, things that makes you even more dehydrated, from coffee to sodas and all this kind of sugary and, then, of course, they have a lot of salt in the food and whatnot. We're completely, dehydrated. So tell us about this book a little bit and why you wanted to write that, how you approached this subject, Christopher.
Yeah, well, our body is built of a lot of water. More than 70% of our body weight is water. And that means that we need water to function. When there's too much water, too little water, then the enzymes which are in the body will have more difficulties to do their work. And as they are responsible of all the biochemical transformation in the body, many things can go wrong when there's a lack of water. In the extreme situation, when someone in the desert is lacking water, well, he has less and less energy, then he dies. But the lack of water we're talking about is not in such situation. It's every day, our neighbors or ourselves when we don't drink enough. And most people say, well, I'm not thirsty. I don't drink because I'm not thirsty. But here the situation is as follows. They don't feel that the signal of thirst is not given by the body anymore because it has not been listened to. These people receive the information, I'm thirsty, I've got a drink. They didn't follow the information. One day, 2 days, several weeks, months, and then the body stops giving the signal because it's no use. And it's very strange, but when these people start to drink more, then they suddenly feel the thirst again. And they say that, how come I'm thirsty, I'm drinking much more than before? But the reason is that as their body is receiving more water, it can give the signal again and get more water, and the whole system works well again.
Yeah.
So if someone says, only drink when I'm thirsty, it's not a good way of doing things. He should learn to drink normally, normal quantities of water again, and see if his thirst doesn't come up again. And it will. It will.
And then you can watch the color of your urine, right, to see if you have a good amount of water in your body.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it, because if the urine is made of water but carries a lot of toxins, if there's a lack of water, then the volume of urine will be lower, and therefore the color much stronger, because the density of the urine will be, the density will be bigger. So if someone is always has a urine which is clear like water with no yellow in it, it's that's a sign that he either drinks a lot or doesn't eliminate enough. But if someone has very strong yellow in, or even brown color of the urine, that shows that he's probably not drinking enough.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the only time that wouldn't be true if you take a lot of B vitamin or eat, what do you call it? The red beets, right?
Beetroot, yeah. The red beetroot, yeah. Because, beetroot gives a color red to the urine.
Yeah. That's right. So, okay, hydration, obviously, really important, and that's something we should, pick up. So is there any, again, it varies depending on what you do, if you exercise a lot, depending on what you eat and whatnot. Yeah. But, I mean, how many glasses of water per day should we drink ideally?
It should be 8 glasses of 3 deciliters. I don't know with my measures. Yeah. That's around 2 to 2.5 liters of water. It's an average figure.
Yeah.
Of course, if someone works under sun, building roads or houses, and sweats a lot, he has to drink much more. If someone is sitting in front of a computer and his only physical activity is pressing on the mouth of his computer, then
right,
he must not drink as much. But it depends. If he's working in an office which is very warm or overheated or has artificial air conditioning and so forth, it dries the body because there's a lack of humidity usually.
So
they have to eat more. And as you said also, the reason why we are dehydrated is that we eat a lot of salt each day, and salt needs a lot of water to be compensated and eliminated. And many foods that people eat are not so full of water. I mean, if you eat fruits and vegetables, they are made of 85 and 95% of water.
Right.
But if you eat bread, that's not the case anymore. If you eat chocolate, it's not the case. Sugar, not the case, and so forth. So the general diet can be low in water, and this contributes also to a lack of water for the body. And the result of that, the first result is that the person becomes quite tired. He tires very easily. He recuperates very slowly. Well, he's not very fit. And many people are very astonished that just by drinking more water, they have much more energy. And they think that energy comes from sugar. How come just by drinking water, I've got my energy? But the reason is that water is necessary for the body to function, among other things, to use the sugar which is in the body to produce energy.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
By the way, I think about 3 deciliters is about 10 ounces, I believe. So just for those who still don't use the metric system, that can so about eight glasses of about 10 ounces a day. That's somewhere in between there. But yeah, sorry, Christopher, go ahead.
Yeah. And to remember to drink, because some people said, yeah, I forgot to drink, but to drink more, one can fill in 2 big bottles of water to have our 2.5 liters a day, and have as an objective that we will drink all this water to by the end of the day. And it just takes a little organization to spread the intake through the day, is in order not to be stuck with 2 liters to drink before you go to bed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You kind of organize yourself and decide, I will drink those 2 bottles by the end of the day. And
that doesn't matter.
You act accordingly.
Yeah. It will run straight through, and that will be it. You have to keep, well, like a house plant, right? You have to keep it. You can't just let it dry out all the time and then pour all the water in. That's not going to work. You have to, give it regularly in that case. And obviously another factor here, the quality of the water goes without saying here. This isn't obvious. I mean, a good, clean Swiss spring, of course, from the mountain or something, that would be awesome, right? But in some cases, people, they have really poor tap water, even worse in some cases, in some countries, America, Ireland, and what have you, they pour in fluoride, a absolute, a toxin in the water. And this is just absolutely horrible that they do this,
Yeah. Of course, the water must be the purest you can find. And but even if it's not too pure, it's better to go on drinking 2.5 liters rather than say, I'll only drink 0.5 liter a day because there are a few poisons in it. It's better to have enough water, because water can help to transport many toxins out of the body. It's a way of transporting them. So if you lack water, well, you won't be eliminating as much.
Right, yeah.
Some people use a filter to have a better tap water. That's good also. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, that's really good, and that's it's a huge issue that a lot of people are struggling with. And as you say, they don't even think about it that much, or when they are thirsty, they go for a soda pop or something like that, and they drink that instead. It completely dehydrates you. And I think it was we know this now, but there was a recent article of a man who was drinking, I think it was 10 cans of Coca-Cola per day or something like that, and it's just like incredibly detrimental, and it's just completely, you got overweight, and it's all these issues. Water is the best thing you can drink, clean, pure water,
Well, nature has given us a drink, it's water.
Yeah.
It wasn't Coca-Cola.
No, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about the issues of acid and alkaline, that balance, and how to approach that with our food, Christopher, as well. Because, I tried to do the vegetarian and vegan thing for a few years, I think, and it was just too detrimental on my system. I've always been very aware of the acid alkaline issue, and I realized that, that's the way to go. But at the same time, I didn't get enough, fat and protein in my diet eventually, and it just didn't work for me, so I had to switch over. But when you do go and eat, meat and things like this, it's obviously important that you balance that with a lot of vegetables so that you get the right levels. Yeah. Tell us more about that then.
Well, the acidal alkaline diet has nothing to do with vegan. It's the idea is that our food and our body also is made of two different main kind of substances, the acids and the alkaline substances, and there should be a balance between the two. So our body has a pH, that's the way we measure the degree of acidity of a body or something, a pH of 7, which is neutral, and it should stay like that. I mean, the blood and the cellular fluids must have a pH of 7. It's 7.3 to be in good health. But when someone eats a lot of foods which are very acidifying, that means which contain a lot of acids in it, or which when they are used will produce a lot of acids, then there will be more, there will be acids entering the body every day, and the pH of the body is in danger of changing. It will become more acidic. And many, many different illnesses can be triggered by this acidity. Too much alkaline substance is not a situation we experience nowadays. It's very rare. It's not a problem. But too much acids in the body, in the whole body, I mean, not in the stomach only.
Sure.
It's in the whole body. It's something which is very detrimental, because the acid attack the cells, the organs, and destroy them, or they hinder the enzyme to function well. And as we have seen, the enzymes are responsible for all the biochemical changes in the body. So we are really in trouble if the body becomes too acidic.
Yeah.
And the reason most people become, or the main reason people become too acidic, is that they eat too many foods which are acidifying. And that is all the foods which are rich in proteins, meat, fish, eggs, cheese, but also starch, cereals, breads, pasta, and sugar, white sugar, and not everything where you find a lot of sugar, so candies, chocolate, and so forth.
Yeah, exactly.
Many people eat mainly that, and not so much the alkaline foods, such as the vegetables, green vegetables, all the salads, and the colored vegetables, carrots, beetroots, and so forth. Or potatoes are very alkaline too, chestnuts, almonds, bananas, and so forth. So, but let's say stay especially with the vegetables and the fruits, basically the fruits too. So that's quite typical. Many people nowadays eat a lot of meat, starch, bread, but very few vegetable and fruits. And therefore, the intake is acid, with a predominance of acids, which will acidify the body and make them ill. So the solution to this situation, in my book, The Acid Alkaline Diet, I give all the illnesses which can arise from such an imbalance, and there are many. It can be corrected by eating more alkaline foods, that is the vegetable, fruits, and so forth, and reducing meat, starch, not necessarily cutting them completely out, but
I couldn't cut out meat anymore. I it's one of those things. I choose to do that, and of course then I want to actively balance that, just as you said, applying more vegetables to that, because it makes me feel good and makes me feel more I guess optimal in terms of when I eat the food and whatnot. But a lot of people eat way too much grain as well, and of course the wheat issue has become like a epidemic in itself. And I mean, look at how many people are getting celiac disease and the all this gluten-free stuff and whatnot. And if we can't process this food, we shouldn't be eating it at all. The worst thing is about the wheat, of course, is that they've started to not only genetically modify it, but back in the 70s, they switched over to this kind of dwarf wheat that, grows very fast and quick and you get a lot of yields and whatnot, but it's absolutely horrible for the body. And so many people, there's flour in everything and they eat way too much bread, so that's a huge issue for me anyway to point out.
Yeah. Well, the problem, is that the food industry is not aiming to more health, but for more money, shall we say, most
sure,
of the time.
Sure, of course.
And they will take a wheat, which gives a lot of grains and easily and so forth, and not necessarily what we need. And the health problem arises, But so that's, in general, I've just explained the acid-alkaline problem. One thing I give in my book is something which is not found everywhere and which is very important, that the fruits is a special food, and some people cannot, fruits have weak acids, are very rich in weak acids, which normally are oxidized by the body and transformed in something which is alkaline. But some people are not capable of doing it, or not very well, so that when they eat fruits, they will not oxidize the acids, and the acids will stay acids instead of becoming alkaline as with most people. And this information, a piece of information, is fundamental because many people nowadays suffer from this weakness, this incapacity of oxidizing well the weak acids, and they eat a lot of fruits and tomatoes, which is a fruit also, and in the same category it's vinegar and they get worse and worse. They think they are eating in a healthy way, but they are acidifying themselves a lot and getting more and more ill. And it's something which is not well known and which must be known by these people who don't metabolize well the fruits.
Right, yeah.
It's all explained in detail in my book, but it's because usually you hear, eat fruits, follow a lemon juice cure or vinegar cure. It's very good for your health. Yes, it's very good for your health if you're someone who can oxidize the weak acids of fruits. Otherwise, it's not.
And what happens if you cannot? Is there a clear kind of reaction to this that you get?
Well, someone who is prone to eczema, for example, when he's too acidic, when he starts to follow a lemon juice cure or a vinegar cure, his eczema will increase and increase even more and become very bad because there are so many acids coming in the body. It increases the symptoms of the illnesses the person has.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. But otherwise, if you don't notice any clear kind of effect of what you're taking, then you're okay. Okay. Yeah. Because I mean, I've obviously, you know, putting things like apple cider vinegar on your salad or whatnot, and, you know, lemon, I think the whole, didn't you write that about the mono diet as well in terms of the grapes, or was it grape seed extract
grapes? Yeah. But that's only what I said in book. It's only for the people who can metabolize well these weak acids.
Yes.
But the people who are in this situation, they have, for example, they have joint pain, for example, and if they eat too much fruit, the pain increases. But they're not aware of it because sometimes they have read that it's good to eat a lot of fruits against rheumatism, and they will eat more and more. But if the pains increase, they belong to the category of people who should not eat fruits or not as many.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, fruits, it's still sugar too, by the way. I mean, it's a better version of sugar, but I would say definitely opt for more vegetables if you can, and go easy on the fruit.
I think that the way to see things is like that, but every food has qualities, but also defects. I mean, fruits are very good for many things, but it can be too acidic for some people, and one has to be careful. Same thing can be said about meat. It's good to have proteins, energy, and so forth, but too much is bad. There's all both sides, and one should learn what are the good sides, the bad sides of every kind of food, and then act accordingly. Well, depending on what are our problems, eat more or less of this and that foods.
Yeah.
But not say, as it's usually said, food are good for, fruits are good for everybody, because it's not true. Or whole bread, whole grain bread is the best we can eat. Everybody should eat it. It's not, basically it's true, but some people have a very weak digestive tube, very sensitive, and they will not digest such a hard fruits to digest. I mean, it's not that it's so hard, but it's too hard for them, and they get problem. It's better for them to have something which is half whole, or for some to eat white bread. I mean, as a therapist, that's the way I talk. No food is good for everybody. One has to see in who it is going into.
Of
and
course,
then we can say it's good for him or it's not good for him.
Yeah, it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's always a kind of a balancing task depending on the chemistry of your own body, your blood type. There's a number of different issues that contribute to what is going to be good or bad for you, right?
Yes, yeah.
So let's see here if there's anything else we want to just kind of talk about here. We do have about 10 minutes or so, and I want to ask you if there's something else major we should go into. I know that you're writing something, and we can save that for later if you want, but on the blood as well, right? You're writing something that's going to be released next year on the, I don't know, was it called The Secrets of the Blood or something like that?
Yeah, in that direction, the Secret of the Blood. It's a book, it's naturopathic, but it's also a spiritual approach to health. The idea is that we as a human being, we are not only a physical body directed by a brain, but we are a spirit, a soul, that is an immaterial spirit incarnated in a physical body. And the way the spirit is incarnated or linked to the body is thanks to the blood. And depending on the blood composition, the link between the spirit and the body is good or not so good or even bad. So that the way we feel, the way we perceive the situations we experience depends a lot on our blood composition. And therefore, if someone eats, if someone has a good blood composition, he will be fit, happy, and go forward in life without any major problems. But if someone is lacking something in his blood, a lack of vitamins or minerals, or lacking, or not lacking, but has heavy metals in it, which should not be there, he will feel a bit depressed or anxious or aggressive and so forth. And these people who are depressed because of that can be helped by changing the blood composition, which can be done by changing the diet of the person.
Right.
That's
the
general idea of the book, yeah.
Interesting, yeah. So,
but it's for spring. Also, it's in the traditions. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So obviously, a lot of things is related to the input of the body, that the diet. It's really central to it, and that might be one of the main reasons because why we're kind of feel out of whack or in the wrong way, what have you. Because sure, there are genetic ailments and things that we are born with and whatnot. But a lot of people take that view that basically, there's nothing you can't work with, and there's something which you could always do to improve your situation by living in the right way and eating the right things. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, each of us has a different body, which is more or less powerful, fit, or strong at the liver level, and so forth. We are all different, but if we live in a healthy way, we'll be healthy and fit and have enough energy and joy of life. But if we don't live accordingly in a healthy way, then problems arise, and the less healthier, the more problems. And the problem of our society is that we overeat, that's one thing, and we eat a lot of things which are produced by industry and which do not come directly from nature. And there we're in trouble, because man doesn't know everything, and he thinks he's very bright, but sometimes he does big mistakes, like putting poisons in the food, all the food additives, many of the food additives, for example, and
that's
so
right.
forth. So we are living in an anti-natural way, and that's why so many people are ill. Because when you think of it, the body is created and function in a way which is just incredible. All of the different things which are happening in it to keep us in health, it's always working to keep us in health. And if we are not healthy, it's just because we work against it by our unhealthy way of living. And the main thing is the foods, our diet, the food we eat is not correct. The lack of exercise, lack of deep breathing, lack of contact with nature, and so forth.
Yeah.
And it's the aim of natural medicine to bring the consciousness of those lacks and suggest different possibilities to a different solution to come back into a more natural way of living.
Well, indeed. Look at the cancer epidemics in the world. We do more and more of the same thing, and yet we expect different results, and it's just not going to happen. And it feels like orthodox medicine. I don't know why they call it orthodox, by the way, because it's fairly new and recent and hasn't been around for that long. But we've completely thrown out the window. Well, many people have, anyway. The old, natural remedies that we used to have. They used to be very prominent within any society, basically around the world. And And this has been replaced, unfortunately, by this very, very, very chemical-oriented, very much and materialistic as well, yeah. And very much about it has to be proven in a certain, you know, way for it to work or whatnot. And yet all these things, we used to be way more healthier many, many hundreds of years ago. And the further back you go, the better it seems to be. Not always, perhaps, but, you know, generally.
Yeah, but basically. Because I think the big mistake is that the medical system gives the impression that you just have a pill, take a pill to cure yourself. And it doesn't talk enough about all the hygiene of what you eat, to eliminate enough, to make take enough exercise. Or if they talk about it, it's just on the side. It's not something which could be good, but it's not so important. But it's primordial that people eat correctly, don't intoxicate themselves with all sorts of things, and so forth. It's a system which is sometimes useful in acute situation, but which doesn't make people more full of wisdom and conscious of what is health. On the contrary, it's kind of, I will cure that with a pill or this and that. But health is something which would work towards, which would merit by our efforts to live in accordance with nature.
Well, that's right. It's a detachment from the natural order that exists. But by the way, let me ask you before we round things up here, what's your view on cooking the food versus eating some of it raw, I guess in particular then vegetables? I mean, a lot of people say that when you cook it, you actually destroy some of the things in it. In other cases, some food you need to cook, of course, to make it digestible and everything else. But what's your take on that, cooking versus the raw debate?
I think man has learned to cook his food, and as you say, some foods must be cooked, and it's not a problem, but there's a way of cooking it. One doesn't have to cook it too much or burn things or carbonize them or use bad oils and so forth. But cooking is something which I think is a fair enough legitimate that we can do it. We could not eat cereals if we didn't cook them. Not many people would eat meat if it was raw, and so forth. But I think it's normal to cook foods, but it would be abnormal to eat only cooked foods. There must be a balance between the raw foods and the cooked foods. And also another thing is that when the food is hot, it brings heat to the body, which is energy, and it helps the body to function. And if I agree, if you live on a beach and under the tropics, when it's always sunny and warm, you can just eat raw foods. Maybe it's possible. But when you live in Switzerland or in colder countries, like many places in the United States, well, it's not possible to eat raw all year round.
No.
You must have heat and cooked foods.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
We've adapted ourselves to that and...
Well, I mean, again, think about
it
this.
I'm not against it.
No, exactly. Well, think about it this way. I think, mankind has survived for a long time, and we've developed in a certain direction due to the things that were available to us in our environments, and this is how we've survived. Meaning, it's not. I mean, sure, there's some things that still can be detrimental, but people still go on living. But nonetheless, my point being is, I think there is wisdom in just observing how it used to be. And just going by those guidelines is a pretty good start on things, and doing it as natural and as organic as possible, and the closest to nature as possible. That's you can't fail with that, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So, by the way,
I agree totally with you.
Excellent, Christopher. Now, let me also just mention here before we round up here, you have a great. If we return for a moment to natural remedies for inflammation, you have a great. Appendix at the end of the book where you basically list different ailments or illnesses and then of course the suggested plant use for treatment therein. Yep. And then of course you have a full list there of all the different things we've been talking about and many more that we didn't get to today. So we do recommend that people, you know, check that out and look at that because there's a lot of good information in there. But Christopher, give us the website once again and of course mention the book titles that you want to so people know what to pick up from your store.
Yeah, Well, the address of my website is www.christophervasey. Christopher, P at the end, P-H-E-R, and then V-A-S-E-Y, dot C-H, C-H for Switzerland. On this website, you find all my books. They're presented with the title, the content, the summary, the content, and articles on different subjects of the books. What we were talking about, natural remedies for inflammation, which is a very practical guide on 33 natural remedies against inflammation, illnesses with inflammation. But there are other books which can be useful. The Optimal Detox, How to Cleanse the Body of All the Toxins. Also very practical, how to stimulate the liver, the kidney, the intestines, the skin, and the lungs with plants, hydrotherapy, massage, and so forth. And also another book, The Acid Alkaline Diets for Optimum Health, which explains that our way of life, our way of eating, is makes our body very acidic, and many illnesses we suffer of are caused by it. So it explains which foods are acidic, what is acidifying our body, what could alkalinize it, and so forth. It's also very practical with long list of foods and examples of diets and so forth, which can be followed, neutral supplements which can help to get into balance again on the acid-alkaline level. Well, there are the books, but you can discover them yourself on the website. So it's www.christophervasey.ch.
All right, very good. We're going to have that linked up on redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com as well, so people can just click the link from there and check it out. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program today, Christopher. We really appreciate your time today, and of course for letting us know about your naturopathic work and getting, of course, health under control by applying self-knowledge and by observing what exists in nature. So thank you. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
All right, folks. I hope you got some great tips today for some natural remedies to help you stay healthy and stay away from the hospitals. Well, we have more shows coming down the pipeline here. We have Marianne Vancourt, Robert Ferguson, Colin Liddell, and Andy Nowicki. Also Joaquin Flores, John Lash, Dennis Fecho, and Jeff Gates, to name a few. For now, we say thank you for listening, and of course, as always, a big warm thanks to all our wonderful, lovely members out there. I hope you have a great rest of your day or evening wherever you're at, and we'll pick this up again in just a few days. Take care.